Oh, well, then it'll be 5 minutes before he gets here.
Jiggers, let me out of here. Thanks,
I'll call
you
up if you're there. Oh,
hello, Edgar. How are you?
Oh, hello, Mr. Fields. Hello.
Where's the little woodpicker snack bar?
Yeah, well, now, Bill, I can explain everything about that incident.
Well, explain why your belligerent little bundling board perpetrated an act of sabotage by stretching a wire across my garden path.
Yes, I'd be glad to do that. You see, it was perfectly innocent, Bill. You see, he was setting a skunk trap. That's what he was doing.
Oh, a skunk trap.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine. That covers everything.
Yeah.
Thanks for the compliment.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way.
That's okay. Nevertheless, the other evening, as I was traversing my garden in search of flora and fauna, flora is my cook, you know.
Oh, I see.
Young lady.
Uh-huh.
Makes wonderful crepes.
Yes, well, I believe all that, but that's really none of my
business. Well, I was walking along when I unexpectedly tripped, and the next thing I knew, I was prostrate on terra firma.
Oh.
Which was not unusual in itself, but the circumstances.
Yes, I can believe that. But, Bill, let's get back to the skunk trap, remember?
Oh, you mean flora?
No. The skunk trap.
I see what you mean.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, it was quite an experience.
Yeah.
I broke my femur and fractured my decanter.
Oh, well, now that does sound rather serious, Bill.
Yes, it was. I hurried to the hospital. Clang, clang, clang.
Clang, clang, clang. Yes, I remember that.
After 2 days in the hospital, I took a turn for the nurse.
Work.
Yes, it is. It's the secretary.
Yes.
And I took some beautiful x-rays of my leg. 6 reels of them.
6 reels, that's fine. A feature, huh? What'd they find, Bill, in your...
Well, just I expected. They found my leg was hollow.
Is that tell me, Bill, were you running a fever, too?
No, I had some trouble with blood pressure.
Oh, I see. Rather high?
92.
No, yes.
Place that hospital,
yeah.
Very comfortable bed.
Well, that helps, yeah.
He even had mattresses on the wall.
Oh, they made you feel right at home, did they?
Oh, yes, he did, yes, Bill, until I suffered a nervous breakdown.
Now, don't tell me you had a nervous breakdown, Bill. Oh, that's awful. Well, Charlie certainly has caused you a lot of trouble, hasn't he?
I don't blame the little fella, Edgar. I love him. He's all right.
Oh, he's light.
Even though my fall also caused a pull tendon, Paget's disease, double vision, bad case of pernicious dandruff.
No.
Not to mention Logo and the Magogo and Ralph the Delta.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Yeah. Complicated by a slight case of misanthrope and boffindale and the slip.
What?
A slip sacroiliac.
No, a slip what?
Thrown in,
yeah. A slip what was that?
Sacroiliac. S-A-C-R-O hyphen.
Yeah.
From there on, you're on your own.
You know, Bill, it's really a wonder that you recovered from all that.
The croakers had given me up in despair. One day they discovered I had a past the crisis.
Oh, I see. So now it's crisis, is it?
Yeah, it's a technical word.
Yes. Well, what day was it when you passed this crisis?
The day they found me blowing the foam off my medicine.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Well, when Charlie learns of this, Bill, he'll be very sorry. I know he'll be sorry. And I just want you to know, Bill, that he's ready and he's willing to apologize.
Oh, that's quite all right, Edgar. As a matter of fact, I'm very fond of the boy.
Yeah?
Where is the little fire hazard?
Yeah. I think I'll call him in, Bill. Just a moment. Oh, Charlie.
He's not here.
Never mind.
Charlie. Back
here. I want you to know that Bill is right here.
Yes.
Yes. And he knows all about it.
Uh-huh.
And Charlie wants to talk to you.
Yeah?
Yeah. No.
Good evening, Mr. Fields.
What did he say?
I said, good evening, that's all.
Let's not jump at conclusions.
Charlie, I've been telling Mr. Fields that you want to apologize. Now, isn't that right?
Yes, it is. Yes, I do, Mr. Fields. I do.
Well, that's just fine, my little chump. Chum, yeah. There she goes again. That's fine. Tell me, my little man, why did you to set a trap in my garden. Don't you know there aren't any skunks there?
No skunks in your garden, then?
No.
I'm sorry.
No wildlife, with one possible exception. My place is occasionally infested with a herd of pink mastodons.
Pink mastodons. Oh, elephants, yes.
That's right.
I hear that the elephants around your place take aspirin to get rid of W.T. Fields.
Is it true, Edgar, that Charlie can trace his ancestry back to an old chestnut stump, the abode of a family of polecats?
Yeah.
Oh, this is like the old days, isn't it, Bill? Yeah, boy. Remember how we used to fight, Mr. Field?
Yeah.
Foolish, wasn't it?
As far as my little friend. But we're above that sort of thing now.
Yes, those are the good old days, aren't they, Bill?
Yeah, remember the time I said I'd slice you into a Venetian blind?
Yeah.
That was a good one. I think I don't know, was it?
Yeah. It was. Remember how I topped you by saying that makes me shudder? Oh, that was good. I liked it.
Who said you topped me?
I topped you.
Why, the only laugh you ever got was a sneer from a disgruntled termite.
Why? You keep that up and you play a return engagement at the hospital.
Better be careful, my little friend. You know, wood pulp is in the priority list.
Yeah, well, listen, you long-nosed anteater. Now, wait a minute.
Gentlemen, please, gentlemen.
Bergen, I'm afraid Mr. Fields just doesn't love me anymore, that's all.
Don't tell me I don't love you. I'll break every knot in your body.
Now, wait a minute. That's the wrong attitude, Bill. Why can't we be friends? What do you say, Charlie?
Okay. I'll make one more attempt at appeasement.
Yes.
Then I'll fire on sight.
Yes. You'll do nothing of the kind, Charlie. You're going to be nice to Mr. Fields.
But he doesn't like me.
Why idolize the little chap? I'd do anything for him.
Would you, Mr. Fields?
Why, I'd be glad to. Anything the little chap craves.
Hey, well, Mr. Fields, I have a new bicycle, you see.
Oh, would you like a bell?
Well,
I can, I'm not affluent, but I could buy you a bell.
Well, that's nice that I have a bell. But I was just wondering if I could borrow... Oh, I don't suppose it'd be right.
Yes, it's all right, Charles.
Oh, no,
but I love the little
No,
child.
No, it isn't right.
Oh.
Could I borrow your nose for a tail light? No.
Edgar, it's no use.
Well, Bill, it's only the mischief in the boy. That's all it is. That's what makes him say those things. Why, Charlie is his own worst enemy.
Not while I am around, these days. Can he borrow my nose for a tail light? Why, I'll fill him full of your lead and lose him for a pencil.
Yeah. I go my lapel
bag in
here. Wait a minute. I
want to
hang one on him.
No, you don't hang on him.
Now,
stop it. Remember, Mr. Fields is not a well man, are you, Bill?
No, that's right, Edgar.
Yeah.
I've been a fragile thing of beauty ever since I was born.
Yeah.
Why, you weren't born. You were squeezed out of a bar rag.
Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, along with W.C. Fields from their popular Sunday evening radio program of many years ago, known as the Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy Show, and also known as the Chase and Sanborn Hour, which, of course, referred to the show's long-standing sponsor, Chase and Sanborn. They used to say what Mr. Chase didn't know about coffee, Mr. Sanborn did. Edgar Bergen and Charlie joined the Chase and Sanborn Hour on NBC in the year 1936. Charlie, of course, was Edgar Bergen's principal dummy. He wore a monocle over his right eye, and he generally appeared in formal dress, including a top hat. And he never seemed to run out of quips about pretty girls, his troubles in school, and his friend Skinny Dugan. And he constantly needled Bergen about moving his lips while he made Charlie talk. Of course, Mortimer Snurd was another popular dummy, and then there was Effie, an unattractive old maid whose chief interest was catching a man. Charlie and Mortimer were on much more than Effie. She only turned up occasionally. Eventually, the Chase and Sanborn Hour gave way to the Coca-Cola sponsorship of the Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy Show. This is all part of our tribute to Edgar Bergen on tonight's KSFO Comedy Hour. In just a moment, we'll be playing back an interview that Edgar Bergen did with KSFO back in 1971. We'll have some more excerpts from the Chase and Sanborn Hour with Fred Allen and W.C. Fields as the evening progresses, too. So stick around. This interview with Edgar Bergen was done with a KSFO producer way back in 1971.
What is the origin of Charlie McCarthy?
Well, I got him when I was a senior in high school. I had a papier-mâché figure, and I wasn't happy with him, of course. It was, they have no character. And I always felt, I've always insisted that the face must look like the voice that goes with it. And so I saw a newsboy, an Irish newsboy, in front of the high school building in Chicago, Lakeview High School, and he had a real fresh little Mick Monkey face. You know, I thought, that's pretty good. So I sketched that in my history book, Medieval and Modern History. And my history teacher's name was Miss Angel, and she wasn't at all. But, and this was in February or early March, and I put an order into a woodcarver who made dummies there in Chicago. And she said, would you remain after class? And she said, don't plan on graduating unless you can improve a great deal in your history work, because I cannot pass you. So it went on. I was booked anyway on Chautauqua for that summer. So I, you know, the diploma didn't mean anything too much. But I was busy writing jokes. And then I got Charlie down in late April or early May. And I went on a student recital. And I heckled all my teachers, including the principal, in a nice way. So Charlie says he had Miss Angel for history. And don't let the name fool you. She grows horns at examination time. And Brown was the principal, and we'd call him Square Deal Brown. He liked that. And Charlie says he's in his office so much he has his own desk there. Sometimes they close the door and play checkers. I says, you should be very flattered that the principal, Square Deal, would play checkers with you. He says, there's only one thing wrong. Square Deal cheats. Well, it was a big success. So the next day, she said, remain after class. And she says, if you just try, I will help you graduate. The world needs laughter more than it needs another ventriloquist. And you must go on with your work. That's how I graduated from high school. So don't let anybody not hanging around with a dummy. It paid off.
That's the amazing thing with your success on the radio with a dummy, a visual act like that.
Well, that's true. I certainly didn't belong there. It wasn't. And I tried to get on. And I auditioned for the head of the NBC in Chicago when I was playing the Chaperie Club. And he said, no, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't go on radio. They wouldn't believe it. And the comedy isn't right. I says, well, they're laughing at it at the Chaperie. He says, but this is my specialty. I taught speech at his college, and I know what it should be. And you're fine. So it was only 2 months after that I was in New York, and then I went on the Rudy Vallee show. And in another month or two, I was back in Chicago, and they were piping me into New York because I was playing the Chaperie. They wouldn't let me out of it. So I would go out of my way to go past this man's office to say, how do you do? How do you do, you know? And he became vice president of NBC in spite of all that.
I think your feud, of course, there are a number of famous incidents, but your feud with W.C. Fields is still remembered today. Could you tell us a little bit about W.C. Fields and Charlie McCarthy?
Well, he was the most wonderful man I ever worked with. Yeah, he's the greatest talent who could write comedy, play the comedy you wrote for him, and do pantomime. He just had all three things going. And we never had a disagreement. We had great respect. He sent me a wire when he was in the sanitarium, when he was listening to the show. So when we moved to California, we asked for him, and he came on. He was a great man to work with because... and of course, we both, he would write, we would say, this is what we'll talk about. Then, of course, this is the script, and then we both would try and sneak in, dirty it up, you know, put in toppers to try. And he liked that. He liked the fight, you know. And we tried to keep it balanced anyway. And one day he said, I know Charlie likes me in spite of our arguments because he always calls me Mr. Fields. And I thought that was a pretty fine touch. And Charlie said, Fields once, he's the softest hard-boiled egg he ever met, and which was he did a mock heavy. He was a lovable meanie, you know. Where a lot of people, comedians, they really hurt when they are out there with their remarks. It's open insult, some of it, but it was a great experience. We had lots of fun.
What do you think is the difference between doing the visual Charlie McCarthy and the radio Charlie McCarthy?
Well, I have to watch my lips a little more. But I tell, as I say to Charlie, I'm an honest ventriloquist. I let him know who's doing the talking. I used to be very good when I was playing clubs in vaudeville and all, but it was silly to sacrifice diction for 200-300 people in the studio for 40-50 million people around the country. And I have several firsts. One was having the highest rating of any person on radio at that time in the 40s and the late 30s, except Franklin D. Roosevelt's Fireside Talks. We had a 49-point-something Hooper, you know. And we were the first ones to do a broadcast from a military base at March Field, and we were the first ones to do a broadcast out of the country. And I was the first one to do a television show in a motion picture studio with an audience. We did everything wrong. We built the bleachers too low, so they were looking at the back end of the cameraman and then looking at the equipment. And the fire department got after us. We didn't have enough exits for 200 people in the studio and all that. And it was the first show to be seen. It was for Coca-Cola, the first one to be seen across the country the same night at the same hour, 8 o'clock in New York, Chicago, and out here. That was before network, so it was a big deal. We printed up 85 prints or whatever it was. Coca-Cola did, of course. And that was amazing. It went so well that NBC raised their rates then the next year.
What about your conductor for many years, Ray Noble?
Yes, he's a fine musician, equally good actor and comedian, and we had so much fun with him. And he's now living in Santa Barbara, and that's the closest he can get to London climate. Well, San Francisco would be kind of close to it, too, I guess.
Didn't he get involved with a lot of the bits?
Yeah. Sometimes we would spite him by making him do a Southern, you know, "You all, sir," and all that Tommy Rot. You know? No, he's a fine, fine man.
Your program was such a showcase, though, for so many people. Didn't Abbott and Costello get their radio start on you, for instance?
No, they didn't get their start, but they were on
show.
They're
one of their major exposures.
Yes, we were on for a while, and we had Moore and Gaxton on for a while, too. And, there's nothing nicer than when you've got things going your way and when you're hot, you know. Then everything goes fine. But, I was number one for the first 5 years on radio, and then I was in the first 10. And when I went off 20 years later on radio, I was number one again. I thought that was a good time to quit.
Are there any times when Mortimer actually pulled more mail than Charlie? I mean, did you...
No, I don't believe so. Mortimer wasn't so strong then. Mortimer is a little stronger than Charlie now. I close with him, you know. But he's a little newer. I feel about Charlie, it's like bringing out Mickey Mouse. Unless you know, a little of it's all right, but it's for memory lane. But I like to bring out the other characters, too.
Where did Mortimer come from originally?
He came from the voice that I had. I was playing Chez Paris, and I was bringing Charlie out 2 and 3 times for encores, and that isn't right. You should do something a little different. Well, so I had to go through what I had in other voices, and I had this Mortimer, this little yelp, so it sounded stupid, and I wanted a face to look like it. So I drew pictures on tablecloths, and I read books on phrenology and faciognomy, so... Mortimer is scientifically stupid. He's a combination of weak features. He has a low brow. He has high arched eyebrows, so he's a dreamer. He never knits them in thought. He has a low bridged nose. He lacks aggressiveness. He has a weak chin. He has no determination. But he's charming and he's likable, and to be ugly and homely wouldn't be good enough. So I think there's something refreshing about a simple, honest, modest, stupid person.
What about Effie? Enjoyed her.
Effie is a busybody. She is scientifically constructed as well. She has a long, sharp nose. There's truth in that. Nosy people are long, sharp-nosed people. They are nosy people. A bulbous nose is a kind of a more or less of a relaxed kind of a dreamer, you know. And a strong bridge nose is an aggressive type, you know, like... a lot of your executives, generals, and presidents had strong noses and strong chins. There are things that can change it, but it's pretty much good. They say you knit your brow in thought. Well, that's also, they go straight across. There's some truth in that, too, I think.
An interview with the late Edgar Bergen. On our case.
Granny Zebner, I believe that's our ring.
Hi, Dog Islam, I believe you're right.
I'll see. Hello, Jot 'em Down Store. This is Lum and Abner.
We'll get back to Lum and Abner. limited to those 18 and over.
And now, let's see what's going on down in Pine Ridge. Well, school board work continues to consume all of Lum's time, a situation which has arisen only since Miss Platt took up her duties as Pine Ridge's schoolteacher. As we look in on the little community today, we find the school board president at his desk in one corner of the Jotham Down store, while in another part of the store, Abner and Grandpappy Spears are busily engaged in a game of checkers. Listen.
Well, go on, Grandpap. It's your move. What's the matter with you today, anyway? You ain't keeping your mind on the game at all.
I know it. I'm kind of nervous, Abner.
Nervous?
I always get nervous whenever Lum's in the store while we're playing checkers.
Oh, well, you don't need to worry about him today.
Yeah, but he most always gets riled up when we play in here. Claims we oughtn't to do it during business hours.
I know he does, but I don't think he'll bother us none today, Grandpap.
Well, what's the matter? Is he sick or something?
Love sick is all.
Love sick? Oh, for goodness sake. You mean on account of the new school, Mara?
Yeah. You know what Lum's doing right now?
Well, yeah, he's sitting at his desk over there in the corner working on something.
I'll tell you what he's working on, too. He's trying to study up some excuse to get over at the schoolhouse. He's been trying to think up a good one all morning.
How do you know that's what he's doing?
Well, I just tell about them things. I know that's what he's doing, just as sure as I know that me and you are sitting right
here. Oh, for pity's sake.
Yes, sir.
Well, if he wants to go over to the schoolhouse, why don't he just get up and go over there?
I don't know. But for some reason, he's got to make excuses to me about it.
Make excuses?
Yeah, just practical, like I was his papa, and he had to get permission from me first. Well, me, I don't care where he goes over there or not.
Of course not. Well, maybe he's got a guilty conscience about it.
Yeah, that's more likely it. He knows good and well he ain't actually got no business running over there every 5 minutes. That's the trouble.
What it is, all right, a guilty conscience.
Yeah, mind out. He's getting up from his desk. Oh. Better not let him hear us talking this way. Yeah, well, go ahead, Grandpap. It's your move.
Yeah, I know what it is. Don't rush me.
Well, hurry up.
Don't rush me.
I ain't got all day to sit here and let you study up them weak little moves.
Grannies, I just happened to think of something. Looks like I'm going to have to go over to that dead blame schoolhouse again.
You can't move our Grandpap. How's that, Lum?
I say, it looks like I'm going to have to go over to that dead blame schoolhouse.
Oh.
They're more than likely run out of ink by this time, so I reckon I'll have to tote a couple of bottles of it clean over there.
Ain't that a shame?
Oh, how I hate it. But I guess there ain't nothing else to do but get it on over there. We've still got some ink in stock, ain't we, Abner? Them big, tall bottles, I mean.
Yeah, king size. We got some, but I believe I got some good news for you.
Good news?
Yeah, before you come in this morning, Miss Platt sent Cedric over here to buy some ink. He got 3 big bottles.
Cedric done that?
Yeah, ain't that nice? That'll save you making a trip over to that bad blame schoolhouse.
What right has Cedric got meddling in school affairs?
Well, it wasn't Cedric's idea, Lum. Miss Platt told him to do it. Is that your move right there, Grandpap?
Yeah, that's it right there, right? See, I said it right there.
All right.
And it's a pigeon-toed good one, too, if you want my opinions on it.
See. You're going to regret that move to your dying day, Grandpap. Look at old Lum going back to his desk there. Did you see that look on his face?
Oh, yeah. Right, pitiful. Never have saw a man so disappointed in all my life.
His face fell so far there, I thought he was going to hit the floor.
Yeah. Well, why didn't you let him go on over there?
He can go over there if he wants to. He don't have to ask me. I never said he couldn't go.
No, that's right. You never.
He's just keeping himself from going. That's what he's doing.
Yeah, I reckon you're right, but you ain't helping him none, though.
Yeah, don't worry. He'll be back over here in about 5 minutes with another excuse. I hope he studies up a better one this time.
Yeah, I do, too. I still say it makes me nervous to have him around the store whilst we're playing checkers, though.
In his condition, I bound you, he ain't even noticed that's what we're doing. Go ahead and move.
I've done moved. It's your turn to move right there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. And let's see here. Won't be long till I'll get you bottled up here to where you'll never get out.
Sassy fresh. You'll never see the day that you can bottle up Milford Avery Spears in a checker game.
Is that so?
Yes, that is so.
And all right. How do you like that little move right there, then?
Wait a minute. That's my man you moved.
That's
my man. Just look at the color on it.
Oh, yeah, that's right, ain't it?
Why, of course it is.
Back there. Knows I got to get some new glasses. That's all there to it.
Yeah, I don't care about your glasses. Just leave my men alone. That's all I ask.
All right. It was just a mistake, all it was.
Yeah, you call it that. I know another name for it.
Well, I'll show you I can beat you no matter whose men I use.
Oh, here he comes again, Abner.
Oh, yeah. Wonder what it'll be this time. All right, I believe I'll move right there, Grandpap.
And I'll jump you if you do.
That's all right, I want you to.
Oh, well, wait a minute now. Maybe I don't want to jump you, though.
You've got to jump. Them's the rules of the game.
And this sure is a cool day. You fellas warm enough?
Yeah, I'm plenty warm. Too warm, if anything. Go ahead, Grandpap. You've got to jump that man.
All right. You ought to change them spavin-legged rules.
Now, watch here, Smarty. There's a little old double jump for you right there.
Sure is a cold day. Oh, say, that reminds me, that stovepipe over at the schoolhouse needs cleaning out. Looks like I'll have to go over there and see about the dadgum thing. Oh, me, sometimes I wish I wasn't president of the school board. All this extra work I have to do.
Yeah, well,
If it ain't one thing, it's a dozen half of something else. But it looks like I'll have to go over there right now, because they'll surely need the stove on a cold day like this.
Yeah, well, long when Cedric...
If I don't get over there right away, them scholars will all take the pneumonias. Or get smoked out of the schoolhouse one.
Yeah, well, long when Cedric was in here this morning, he said that Miss Platt had him clean out that stovepipe after school yesterday.
He did?
Yeah. Go ahead, Grandpap.
Oh. That oughtn't to be going on anyway.
Huh?
Cedric oughtn't to be going to school. He's too old.
What'd you say, Long?
Oh, nothing.
Sort of looks like this is your lucky day, you know it.
Lucky
getting out
day.
All that work you hate and despise so much.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, me, Grandpa, sure, what do you need to take so much time on every move for?
I'm studying out something here, Abner, that's why. I'm playing things out in advance. I'm careful. I don't make them knock-kneed helter-skelter moves like some rattle-headed players I know.
Who's a rattle-headed player?
Well, I know some.
Don't get as you, sure I'd be careful me. What I call... Look, old Lum ain't going back to his desk this time. He's going to clean out my feed room.
Oh, what's he doing that for?
Oh, he's mad now. He's going out there and sulk for a while. Whose move is it?
You mean he's going to give up trying to figure out a good excuse to go over to the schoolhouse?
Well, he won't give up complete, but he knows he's practical whip right now. I think it's your move, ain't it, Grandpa?
Yeah, it is, but weren't that your ring there?
I don't know. Might have been. Never paid no attention. I reckon I'll have to answer it here.
Yeah. Go ahead. I want to study here a little more anyways.
Yeah, be sure that's all you do is study. Don't touch none of my men there. Hello, Jotham Down Store and Library. Abner Peabody doing the talking. Mom? Oh, I see. Yeah, well, Cedric just said 3 bottles of ink. He never said what color. Yes, Mom, we got red ink. Well, will tomorrow be soon enough for that? Oh, well, I'll get it right over there then. Yes, Mom. Goodbye.
Hurry up, Abner. I'm all set for you now.
Well,
I'm
scared we got to break up the game, Grandpap. I got to make a deal ever.
Oh, you're studying up excuses because
I
got you cornered there.
I ain't doing no such a thing. Cedric was supposed to get a ball of red ink instead of all blue, and Miss Platt says she needs it today, so it looks like I'll have to tote it over there.
Well, wait. Let Lum do it. He's just dying to get over there anyway.
Oh, why, sure. What's the matter with me? Reckon I'm just so much in a habit of making all the deal evers, I never stop to think about somebody else, Mike.